This is Earth Files, the award-winning news site with the latest updates in science, environment, and real X-Files. Podcasting in-depth reports beyond the 6 o'clock news by Emmy Award-winning journalist Linda Moulton Howe.
1 year ago, in February 2008, I reported at my news website, earthfiles.com, about thousands of sick and dead cave-dwelling bats in New York, Vermont, and Massachusetts. Now, 1 year later, in February 2009, the deaths have spread to at least 8 states, and the exact cause is still not proved. But a white substance is found around the noses and faces of the sick and dead bats. And only 4 months ago, in October 2008, lab analysis confirmed the white stuff is a fungus in the genus Geomyces. That fungus loves cold temperatures in the Arctic and apparently in northeastern winter caves. However, no one had ever heard of the fungus killing bats before now. The mortality rate is nearly 100%, and there is nothing in the global scientific literature about bats dying with white fungus rings around their noses. But that's exactly what was first discovered 2 winters ago in New York caves, and now, by February 2009, the white nose syndrome has expanded beyond New York, Vermont, and Massachusetts to 5 more northeastern states: Pennsylvania, West Virginia, New Jersey, Connecticut, and New Hampshire. Other physical anomalies common to each dead bat carcass is little or no fat. Winter is when bats hibernate in caves and mines. To survive cold winter temperatures, the bats eat as much as possible to build up fat reserves before spending a few months in hibernation, hanging upside down closely together to share body heat. Bats get so close to each other during hibernation that in the case of the little brown bats, 300 of them pack into a square foot space. You can see a photograph of that at my news website, earthfiles.com. Hibernating so closely together also means that bats can spread disease quickly. On Friday, February 20th, a group of scientists trying to figure out what is killing all the bats and how to stop it gathered in a meeting to talk about the latest research data. One of the scientists is Eric Britsky, Ph.D., research wildlife biologist for the U.S. Army Engineer Research and Development Center in Vicksburg, Mississippi. He has coordinated a research project to put temperature-sensitive transmitters on bats in hibernation to determine how often and for how long the bats with white nose syndrome are waking up from hibernation compared with normal bats. His preliminary conclusion is that the sick bats are waking up more often and leaving their hibernation caves, perhaps in desperation before death. But what is causing the sick bats to wake up and move prematurely, using up their precious fat supplies?
The main thought is that the fungus is probably the primary pathogen just because we have nothing else to go on. So the hope is that that's the primary pathogen, because really what we need to do first is locate that primary pathogen and then go from there. If it's a secondary pathogen, then we basically know nothing about white nose and we're starting over from scratch again. Meanwhile, thousands and thousands of bats are dying.
If you all are still at the state where you're not even certain what is killing all these bats, then even if it comes out to be this fungus, it's going to take, what, a year or two or three to figure out how to attack the fungus?
You're right. We don't know that we can stop it even if we know what it is. So there may be nothing we can do. You know, most bat researchers are very pessimistic at this point that we're going to be able to contain this in the short term. These bats ate millions of tons of insects each year, and now these bats aren't going to be out of the landscape controlling insect populations.
An increase in insects.
Yeah, an increase in insects, and then there are also other impacts of that. You know, sometimes these insects are agricultural pests. You know, sometimes they're vectors for disease. So instead of just white nose affecting bats, white nose is really affecting the whole ecosystem in the Northeast. and it'll just continue to get worse and worse as this progresses.
A bat zoologist at the February 20th meeting was Deanne Reeder, PhD. She is assistant professor of biology from Bucknell University in Lewisburg, Pennsylvania. As a bat expert, she is very surprised by the rapid spread of the mysterious bat deaths throughout the Northeast.
And it spread faster than anyone thought that it would. This year, the bats are starving to death. We do know now they have less body fat. Really, I think one of the things that may be coming out of it is that some of the detriment to the animals, particularly those that make it through the winter and then are dying in the summer, is that it really is damaging their wing membranes, so that we've got bats flying in April and May who may not be able to get enough to eat because their flying is hampered. Their wing membrane is 2 layers thick, very, very thin. And when the fungus gets in there, it can destroy that tissue. So we're seeing bats in the summers with wings that look pretty bad, and we think that that might actually be contributing to mortality. So even those bats that survived the winter are having lingering effects. The fungus looks very strongly like it may be the pathogen, but we want to make sure that we're not ignoring other possibilities. So people talked about continued diagnostic work and the need to continue to maybe look for bacteria or viruses or whatever else may be happening, because the risk is if we focus in on this fungus too much, and it's not it, that we've lost valuable time thinking about what else it could be.
Bats have been on this planet for millions of years. Fungus have been on this planet for millions of years.
Right.
Why is it that suddenly in 2007 that a fungus would be able to start decimating hundreds of thousands of bats in the northeastern U.S.?
Almost all of my talks start with bats that have been here for millions of years. They've evolved the ability to not only survive, but to thrive in really harsh environments. And they're really tough little critters. And then now I have to stop saying that. And so there's a couple of possibilities. One is that this is something truly new that they don't have any capacity to deal with. It could be an invasive species. It could have come here from Europe, could have come here from anywhere, and our bats don't have the capacity to fight it off. So that's one possibility. The other possibility is that the fungus is just a secondary infection, that these animals are sick from something else, because fungal infections typically don't kill organisms. The chytrid fungus is a unique exception to that.
And chytrid fungus is taking out the amphibians now.
Yeah. They tend to be infections that show up on animals that are already immune compromised for some reason. So it could be that these bats have a novel bacteria or virus or something else that's making them sick, and their weakened immune systems allow the fungus to grow. So there's really sort of, you know, a couple of different ideas, but that's been one of the biggest questions is why now? Why now and why here? Is the fungus truly novel, or is the fungus found in all of these caves anyway, and for some reason now something else has happened to the bats?
And that signals what could be going on in the environment of the U.S. and the planet, that there is colony collapse disorder of the bees, the bats are dying out, and that we have chytrid fungus taking out the amphibians. All of this is happening at the same time.
Yeah, absolutely. I expect it in Ohio next year, maybe Kentucky, maybe Tennessee. Yeah, if it follows the pattern that it did this year, in which it spread more than we thought that it would, I expect we'll have it in those other states next year.
And if it spreads across the whole United States, I mean, what are the implications?
Insect populations are going to go crazy. These cave-dwelling bats that are affected by whitenose are all insectivores. And so the service that they play, the role that they play in the ecosystem is to remove insects from the environment. So when you look at the millions of bats in the U.S., you're talking about each bat, you know, eating up to 100% of its body weight every night in insects in the summer. You're talking about massive numbers of insects that are removed, and the impact on the ecosystem is going to be huge.
What would happen with the insect population?
It's going to go sky high. It's going to explode. So we're talking about things that are agricultural pests. We're talking about mosquitoes. And then that's going to ripple through the ecosystem. And I said this to my colleague, Greg Turner, the other day. I said, you know, I'm not usually a sky is falling kind of person. And he said, yes, but the sky is falling. And I said, yeah, I agree. It's really tragic, and I quite frankly don't see it being stopped at the moment. Then it may start, you know, dominoing or rippling through the ecosystem at multiple levels that are almost really even hard to predict. But the sky is kind of falling.
Has anybody ever seen a die-off of bats like this before?
No. And in fact, people are sort of starting to kind of comb through old historic records to see. But there is no evidence that I know of anywhere in the fossil record or in recent recorded history of a die-off of this nature in bats.
So this is unprecedented.
Yes, absolutely.
They are one in five of all mammal species?
Yeah, one in five of all the mammal species. So there's a little over 1,200 species of bats.
And they've been around for millions of years, and suddenly they start dying mysteriously, and it's spreading throughout the East Coast.
Yeah, like wildfire. I mean, it's just, it's at a level that's, you know, it is unprecedented, and it's disheartening. And hope that somewhere along the way, there are some epiphanies, you know, some sort of aha moments, and we say, you know, maybe we could hit it with this. We need to figure out how can we control it right now. Even before we understand it, how can we begin to control it?
If the fungus in all eight states sampled so far is identical, how is the fungus spreading and why is it killing the bats?
The fungus is spread by spores into the environment. Fungal spores are meant to be sort of puffed out into the air, and then it would be picked up by another animal, and then it could start to grow and get into the skin of that animal and makes more spores. So the spores are aerosolized. They're able to go through the air and land on another animal. You know, they cluster together. These bats cluster in groups of hundreds together really tightly.
And you all have never seen this happen before. So how is the fungus doing this?
If it's the fungus has undergone some sort of change. There's been a mutation somewhere along this fungal lineage that now gives it the characteristics that it would need to be a pathogen. That jump from something that's not a pathogen to a pathogen, that happens. We know that that happens in infectious diseases. And natural selection works on mutations in DNA. And so as those mutations happen, sometimes you get organisms that are able to do something better, like invade a host, make an animal sick, and then that fungus would be more successful, so that fungal lineage continues. But it's basically evolution by natural selection is what's responsible for emerging infectious diseases. Another thing that I think contributes is the globalization of our societies. Cavers travel around the world. So this could be something that maybe bats in Europe, for example, are resistant to, and it was brought here, and the bats have no resistance. It's like when the Europeans brought smallpox to the Native Americans. You know, you have something that a certain population of animals can deal with just fine because they co-evolved with it and they know how to fight it off, and then you transplant that pathogen to a new place where those animals have no resistance. That would explain why this just sort of came out of nowhere and is hitting hard and fast. This could be an invasive species of some sort.
Well, as a bat zoologist, what is your gut instinct about how this is going to play out for the next 2 to 5 years?
I think we're going to see mass mortality across most of the Northeast, and I think we'll begin to see resistance. I think we'll see some sites where animals are doing just fine, and then it will take decades to rebuild populations. But I think we're going to be behind the eight ball for a few years. We're going to be just counting the dead bats and doing our best to figure it out. And then hopefully within a few years, we'll have a little bit better sense of that. You know, there's a lot of people working really hard on it, but it's not an easy question.
And so the prognosis is that for at least the next few years, bat die-offs are going to continue the East Coast in waves into the central United States and maybe even as far as the West?
Yeah. It has that potential. Absolutely. I'm hoping that if it's truly the cold-loving fungus, that that will keep it out of the south because the bats there don't go into a prolonged hibernation like they do here. So the hope is that it might be limited to the hibernating bats.
But it's kind of hard to imagine the Northeast with all of its humidity without bats controlling insects.
Absolutely. And it's probably going to be in Canada, you know, wherever bats hibernate.
Has there been any information from Canada?
I don't believe they have it yet. We do have several Canadian colleagues in the group, and as far as I know, it's not yet documented in any of the Canadian sites.
What is your bottom line on the worst case that could evolve out of the situation from now going forward?
I think the worst case scenario is that in, say, the next 5 years, we may have up to 90% mortality in cave-dwelling bats in the Northeast, and that it will continue to spread to the south and to the west, wherever bats are hibernating. I'm sure hoping I'm wrong.
And it's hard to imagine losing 90% of the bats.
Yeah, tons and tons and tons of insects that are going to be in the environment that didn't used to be because the bats aren't eating them.
It almost sounds biblical.
Oh, it's like the locust. Yeah, it is. It's huge.
What does your gut tell you is the answer to this?
My gut all along has said fungi don't kill animals, but I'm moving towards changing that. I think the fact that we keep getting all these genetic isolates of the same fungus, it's pretty darn suggestive.
Up until now, in this unprecedented die-off of bats, the fungus was looked at more as an opportunist on things that were already sick.
Absolutely. That's what fungi typically do. Fungi rarely kill animals.
And so now the shift is, if this white-nosed fungus is the smoking gun in this unprecedented bat die-off, it means that something fundamentally has changed in the fungus's ability to attack something that is otherwise healthy.
Yeah. We know so very little about fungi. Only about 10% are actually even classified or can be studied. So I'm not sure about that. But what I think is that other things are happening such that fungi are being able to take a better hold.
That there's environmental deterioration.
Something else is happening. And it could be environmental things. It could be the fact that we're such a global society now. We all travel all around the world.
Indiana bats that are affected by the white nose syndrome are also on the endangered species list. And that makes it a serious passion for a mammal specialist in New York's endangered species program in the Department of Environmental Conservation to try to find out what is causing the rapidly spreading bat deaths. He is Alan Hicks. He has a Master's of Science degree in wildlife management and has worked for New York's endangered species program since 1979. In his 30-year career, Alan Hicks has never seen white fungus rings around the noses of sick and dying bats. I talk with him about this mystery and what he has learned so far. And he told me, quote, "I think global warming is throwing nature so far out of balance that we're going to see more and more earth creatures unable to cope with all the rapid changes. More and more extinctions are going to occur, and only then will humans see for themselves what happens when the coral reefs are dead, when most amphibians are gone, and maybe even when bats are not around to help control insects."
Thanks for listening to this Earth Files podcast from the edges of science, environment, and real X-Files. Go to www.earthfiles.com to see more than 1,000 Earth Files reports with photographs, drawings, and documents. And visit Earth Files every day, every week, for new reports and new podcasts. That's www.earthfiles.com.